Hello, Howarth Timber and Building Supplies. Hello, Howarth Timber and Building Supplies. Paul speaking. How may I help you?
Good afternoon, Howarth Timber Supplies. How can I help you?
No, that's wrong.
No, that's wrong.
Howarth Timber. Make sure you keep that one in. Come on, Audrey, get that phone.
Good afternoon, Howarth Timber and Building Supplies. Audrey speaking. How can I help?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Howarth Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm Paul Bullivant, your host. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Audrey Bodman, who is an absolute phone expert.
I'll pay you later.
Thank you. Now, before I pass on to you, we've been delving into the world of AI.
Yes.
And I put your name into AI.
Did you?
And asked it to generate an introduction for you.
Did you seriously?
I did, yeah. So I'm going to read it out because it's far better than I could come up with. Oh. And I can't remember it, so I'm going to have to read it out. So today I'm joined by Audrey Bodman, founder of the Outshine Group. With over 30 years of experience in sales, customer service, and employer engagement, Audrey is a true expert in helping businesses thrive through better human connections. Mm-hmm. Her work focuses on building rapport, active listening, and authentic communication to boost sales and elevate customer experience, especially on the telephone. So get ready for some incredibly practical and actionable insights on mastering
the phone.
The phone. Welcome.
Thank you.
What do you think to that?
I think it's brilliant.
It's good, isn't it? It's amazing what it does for you. I just put
frightening.
Audrey Bodman, introduction for a podcast and out it came.
Absolutely frightening.
So shall we start then by you introducing yourself, who you are, what you do, how it all began, what brought you into phones?
Yeah, how far do you want me to go back, Paul?
Right back. When you first started work.
All right. So my name is Audrey Bodman. I help people get the best results over the phone. I'm going to go back to my initial phone, the first job I ever had, actually. Okay. I'm actually born and bred in Loughborough, Leicestershire. And the first job I ever had was with a food and drink company called Cater4. Uh-huh. And I was an order taker. So I took orders and extremely shy. I know you would not believe that, but I was very introvert, wouldn't say boo to a goose. And all of a sudden they landed me, put a phone in my hand and said, right, you now need to be an order taker. But not only that, you need to upsell, they call it now, and cross sell to existing customers. So that's how I started. Very, very shy. And then stayed there for a few years and then went into something a bit more, people say a bit more aggressive, which was newspapers. So I spent a lot of time working at the Nottingham Evening Post and I took tele ads, you know.
So you're selling advertising?
Selling advertising. You used to put your washing machine in and washing machine, sell it, and I would be the one that would deal with you. And then later on down the line, there was a position came up for a reception trainer. I was in my 20s then and I went for that position. And that's my first time at actually becoming management with telephone skills. Okay. I've stayed there for a number of years, the Nottingham Evening Post, and then I, before becoming pregnant with my son, I was pregnant with my son, I became a job club leader. Now, a job club leader is somebody who helps the unemployed get back into work. And again, I was using the phone, so I was fine with that. So it kind of just felt natural that I ended up going into the phone arena. You know, I was always told, you know, somebody was new in a job, it was, go and sit next to Audrey. She's really good with customers. And that's how it was born, really. And I wasn't really a fan of the phone, which sounds really bizarre that now I'm in telephone skills training. But in between that time when I was a job club leader, I decided that I wanted to kind of grow. I wanted to add this idea of setting up a business from home. No other reason, Paul, apart from wanting to be at home with my son. It wasn't ambition. No. It was I wanted to be at home with my son. So I set up this business from home. And people used to outsource their telephone calls to me. So you would say, we want somebody who follows up customers to motivate lapsed and inactive accounts. Yeah. And I would be the person that did that.
Did you have any training to do that? Was it all?
No,
all just natural?
Everything that came to me at that stage was me getting really good results in the companies that I worked for. And because I started doing that and getting really good results on the phone, at home in a living room table, no bigger than tiny living room table, and this was in Derby because I'd moved to Derby then, I decided to grow the business. So eventually there was two people come working with me from home, making calls, motivating lapsed accounts, making appointments, and the business grew. And then up until when I decided to go totally freelance, there was at that time about 14 staff. We'd moved to other premises. And I had a lucky break, really, if I'm being honest, because my lucky break came because I wanted to go work with some bigger companies.
Okay.
I picked up that phone and I did my, it wasn't my first new or first cold call because I've been doing them since I'm 17, but I decided to ring a company, a training company called TAC International, a very large sales training company in London, cold call them and literally said, look, I really want to see if I can come on as an associate trainer. And that's where my love of really developing my skills as a telephone skills trainer began, because all of a sudden I was put in front of organisations like American Express, Aviva, and it grew and grew, Hanson Construction. And from that, the more I kept getting results, the more I kept thinking, well, there's something in this. And that just grew. And literally about 20 odd years ago, I decided to go totally freelance. Then started to approach people by phone again, that phone that everyone hates, and to let them know that I was on the market. And I started to approach companies that got people back into work, because that's another area I do a lot of work with, construction, building materials, IT, and the rest is history. It just grew and grew and grew.
So what were some of the lessons that you learned in the early days? So you handed a phone at 17.
Yeah.
And told to start.
To start ringing customers.
How did you learn? What did you learn? Have you got any horrific stories of disastrous calls?
Gosh.
Because that's what everybody wants to hear.
I do remember, it sounds awful, but I do remember a call where this guy was kept hesitating and I kept, I was saying, what do you mean? And he was going, I just couldn't hear him. And I rang up and there was a bit on a piece of paper, and I was working at that time in the evenings for an insurance. It was a loan company. Can you imagine that? And it got on there, MOP, right? So I rang up this gentleman and I said, oh, I'm just ringing. Just had no real training, ringing up. Just want to see how you get on with your moped. He says, what? I said, your moped. He says, I haven't got a moped. I says, yes. I says, you have. It's got a moped here. And in the back, the staff are going, no. And as I put the phone down, because this customer's getting angry and angry, they put the phone down. They were absolutely in stitches. It meant method of payment. And I'd got it, and I just got it wrong. And just little things like stuttering because I was so anxious about making calls, shying away from picking up the phone. It was just horrendous, which is why now one of the areas that I specialise in is working with people who've got phone anxiety.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because those lessons that I learned from such a young age was you've just got to keep doing it.
What made you good?
Practice. My dad always said to me growing up, practice doesn't make perfect, it makes progress.
Very wise.
And that is so true.
Yeah.
It was getting over myself, although it's easier said than done. It was actually starting to realise that I was overanalyzing. So picking up the phone, I had a really good manager as well. Somebody who used to tell me if it was bad, well, what did you learn from it?
Okay.
So
you were getting coached.
I was getting
quietly in the background.
Which I didn't know was coaching then. Yeah. I do now.
Yeah.
And just starting to get the results. I just kept getting the results. And I have got a very competitive streak, which I didn't realise in the early days. But as I got older, I was very competitive. So if I kept getting no, it was like, that's just no now. It doesn't mean no forever. So just kept going. I kept putting myself in situations where I felt really uncomfortable.
Okay.
It was like when I was doing the work for this very large training company, and I was so felt imposter syndrome of they asked me to train other trainers and I was petrified. I mean, I was literally shaking. But again, it was putting myself in that situation to grow.
Did they give you a course to deliver or did they just literally leave you to...
They wanted me to deliver a course, which was appointment making.
Okay.
That was my speciality, making appointments for reps at that time. And they wanted me to train other trainers to deliver that course. So I was okay delivering the material, but just standing up in front of them, it was That freaked me out.
Really?
Still does sometimes.
So you're not keen on standing?
Anyone who knows me well will know that standing in front of people training, I love. That's what I do. Excellent at that. But if you turn around to me now and say, right, I want you to go and do a talk for 10 minutes or you're going to go on stage, whatever, I don't know what it is in my sight. I don't know if it's imposter syndrome, whatever it is, I freak out. As soon as I get on that stage, different story. And I just feel that, you know, the more and more I do this, and I've been doing this for 30 odd years now, is it's more about this mindset thing for me. When people I work with, it's mindset.
Can you teach mindset?
You can make somebody recognise what their beliefs are. In other words, I've got people saying, "Oh, I prefer to send an email rather than pick up the phone." That's a mindset thing. That's sometimes they're scared, but it's then just being able to demonstrate to them the benefits of that. But the reality is, Paul, if somebody doesn't want to change, they won't. Doesn't matter how great the training is, mindset, they won't change.
That attitude of I'd rather send an email.
Yeah,
nowadays,
I get that
or a
so much.
When did you notice that starting to kick in?
Well, I've noticed it over the last few years, but I've noticed that's one of the major things I get when managers approach me saying, we've got staff, we want them to pick up the phones more, but they seem to be reluctant and they seem to always be hiding behind emails. You've got to remember that emails is a method where you have control. You can edit an email, can't you? You can do things with an email. You can kind of decide where you want it to go. You can't do that with a phone call. It's immediate.
Because you've got to react in this.
Because you've got to react immediately. And that's what freaks people out.
So in this day and age then of WhatsApp and text and messaging and email, why is a physical phone call more critical than ever?
Because, you know, we have all these things coming in like AI and all these other. It's the human connection. You can't build a relationship with an email. Social media, you can build trust, you can become credible, but nothing beats somebody hearing somebody's voice or seeing them in person. That human connection is what makes us stand out from the crowd. You know, I work with order takers, for instance, who are used to taking orders. Yeah. That's what they do. They take orders. As soon as they're told to ring a customer, the amount of them that, no, it's okay, I'll just email them. And they go, no. Let's pick up the phone and have a reason to ring this customer. And the difference in them once they start to connect with that person is unbelievable. It's a human connection.
We've done a few episodes recently where we've ended up talking about the younger generation and the impact of social media and how social media is taking away the personal relationship for children. Have you ever noticed a noticeable shift in generations?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, my boys now are a lot older. They're 33 and 30, so that's, you know. But the younger generation that I'm working with now, and I'm getting a lot of that now, they are so used to editing things.
Okay.
That's the best way to put it. Editing an email, editing whatever messages are sending. And as a result of that, they don't get the practice on the phone. You know, that phone that we've been speaking about, the olden days, you'd pick a phone up and you'd have a conversation. So they don't get that practice. And the more they don't get that practice, the more their anxiety builds because they're not being given those opportunities.
They need to listen to your dad's advice. What was it?
Practice makes progress, not perfect.
Not perfection.
Yeah. And it's so true.
I like that.
And I get so many a lot younger people now who say to me, I just don't feel comfortable. But what it is they don't feel comfortable about is how that person might react to them, and they don't know. They literally want it to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Do you think that'll ever change now?
I think people will still become very dependent on those tools like social media, like texting, editing. But I do believe the phone will become even more important because people want to see and hear human connection. You can't get that. The human connection is about empathy. So, yes, it's going to grow. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, the phone and face-to-face is going to be.
Because you can't show empathy.
You can't show empathy.
In writing
you can't show
as well
empathy,
as you can. Because it's body language.
Not
it's,
at all.
It's tone. It's
everything. It's your energy, your enthusiasm. You can't put that on an email.
Do you think that, do you think we can ever go back, though, kind of pre-smartphone, where children were brought up to be more comfortable in talking?
I can't imagine it, Paul. I'd like to believe that that would happen.
Yeah.
But I think with the more and more tools that are coming, becoming more and more available, you've got AI, you've got all these other tools, that seems to be going faster and faster. Yeah. And I think it's down to us as parents and organisations to encourage young people to use the phones more.
In your training, when you're training the younger generation, yeah, they were saying, "Oh, I can't do it." Are they ever surprised that they can do it?
Yes.
When they're coached?
All the time. And that's what motivates me. Because when I do training, I bring along, when I'm doing face-to-face training, I bring along a telephone lab. Right. So it's actually got phones in there. Yeah. And they use those first. They practice, and what they don't know at the time, I never tell them when they're doing it, is they're recorded. So they do the call with a colleague, and then they hear their call back through the phone. But I give them, they do it over and over again. And the more they do that, the more comfortable they get.
And do you think that's in many ways the magic answer, just practice?
The magic answer is 1,000% practice.
Just do
it. The magic answer is, you know, you've got staff that come into start a job. The amount of organisations I see that don't include telephone skills, they don't include onboarding where they get practice and role plays. When I worked for the newspapers years ago, you wouldn't actually go onto the floor until you'd done 6 weeks. 6 weeks of training, yeah? 6 weeks of training, role-playing, everything else. Now I go into organisations and they'll come to me either for employer engagement, because the three areas I didn't mention, I do employer engagement, sales and customer service. And a lot of them come to me when I say, what did you do on your induction? We did all that, but we didn't do anything on phone skills.
Why is that, do you think?
I just think that it's one of those areas that people just think, well, you can just sit and listen to Paul. Observe Paul and think that by observing you, that I'm going to get that confidence. But actually, you're going to get that confidence by doing it yourself. And sometimes a lot of it is because people don't have the experts internally to give that sort of feedback.
Yeah. But it seems a real missed opportunity to get people comfortable on the phone, if generally speaking, phone usage is getting less and less.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because you've just said, people say to me, people aren't using the phones as much yet. I said to you earlier before we even started, I'm busier now than I've ever been with phones, but I'm also busier now with dealing with people who've got anxiety. I'm noticing there's an increase with people who've got anxiety.
They're specifically saying, I'm specifically saying, try and get me word tense. Do you know what's thrown me today?
Yeah.
We're in a new studio. All the other podcasts I've hosted, I've sat where you're sat.
It's a nice studio.
Yeah, I've sat where you're sat. So I'm all cocky. Phone anxiety is becoming a real thing.
The increase is unbelievable. But you see, sometimes people don't come to me and say, I've got phone anxiety. They'll come to me coming up with reasons why they don't want to use the phones. So they'll say things like, oh, I prefer to send an email. I prefer to see somebody face to face. Oh, the phone doesn't work. I don't get any results when I use the phone. I'm dealing with customers and they know if they want what we do, they'll ring me.
Right, okay.
That's how it sometimes. And then when I get to the nitty gritty, there are, to be fair, a percentage that they generally, that is the reason, you know, they've got a really good customer relationship. But majority of the time it's because they are anxious about not knowing how to approach the call. And this is, by the way, Paul, we're not just talking about people who make new calls or cold. We're talking about existing customer base, key accounts, the lot.
So is the anxiety over the lack of planning before the call?
Yes.
Or is it actually the response that they might get when they...
It's not knowing how to respond. They're not knowing. It's a fear of rejection. It's the, I don't feel ready for this. And the conflict that they might get.
Okay.
That's what they worry about. And that can be overcome with training, whether that's internal or external training.
And that's just the vicious cycle. You're anxious, so you don't practice. You never get used to handling the objections, handling the responses. So you become even more anxious.
Yeah, so what happens is, for instance, I do a number of different sorts of courses, but in particular I notice sometimes where I'll say to somebody, right, we've done the training, and they're really geared up and they're going, oh, this training was brilliant. They go back to the boss and they go, yeah, it was a really good course. And then 3 weeks or 4 weeks later, I ring them up just to check in with them because I like check in. Have you made any calls? No, not made any calls yet. And I'm thinking, why didn't they make any calls? And it's because internally they've not been encouraged to pick up the phone to kind of embed what they've just learnt. And if the manager's not bought into the idea of picking up the phone because they don't like picking up the phone either, then it's a vicious circle.
We're going to have a real problem in a generation's time when it's a generation on top of a generation who use phones.
Yeah. I mean, I get managers that say to me, I want my staff to be able to raise awareness about what we're doing, but even I personally don't enjoy picking up the phone. So if you've got that, a manager who's feeling like that, they're not going to be encouraged and they're not going to encourage.
So let's expand on that then and go to the thing that everybody hates, which is cold calling.
Oh, my favourite step.
That must be the one that everybody
they hate
says
it.
They hate it.
Hate it with a vengeance.
So what are the biggest mistakes people make when they're going to do cold calling?
The first mistake is thinking of it as cold calling.
Okay.
I mean, I use the term, but whoever came up with that name, honestly.
What should it be?
Making the first call or a new call.
Okay. Much more positive.
It's much more positive. You know, I'm going to make a first call or a new call. So that's the first thing. The mindset is, let's stop saying making a cold call. Let's say we're making a first call or a new call. Because regardless who it is, you've got to start a relationship somewhere.
Yep.
So you have to make that first call.
Yep.
The second thing is going on the phone with relevance, having tip is being relevant, be clarity, knowing why you're ringing people. That I see far too many people trying to wing it. Oh, hello, just thought I'd ring you, just want to know what you do. Have you not looked at the website? You know, it's those sort of stories I get, and I say the reason you're getting rejection is because you've not done any research.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, and then the second thing is having not forgetting scripts. I know that I get a lot of people to say, well, I do like something put down notes, but I say work more on your structure of your call.
Okay.
Because your structure, as opposed to a script, has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Let's say you've got promotion or something. I always give the example of a doctor. I love to talk about doctors. Says if you go to a doctor, we talked about a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you came to a doctor and you said, I've got a really bad back, and I go, right, I'm going to prescribe you some pills straight away, what would you do? You go, but you've not asked me any questions. So why do we do this? So the tip is go on the phone with the mindset of, I'm going on the phone because I want to learn something about this organisation. And to learn something, I'm going to have to ask some really good questions. So prepare at least one or two good questions. Because that's a bit you can plan. And when you start, you're beginning your call, you're going into the call, demonstrating that you know something about the organisation. No call should ever feel like a cold call if you've done a research.
So you've got your, the beginning is all about
your introduction. Yeah, who you are, where you're coming from, and the reason you've chose that organisation.
The middle is
asking
your
questions, and then trying then to match what you've done. You know, what you do is relevant to what they've said.
Yeah.
Notice I've said what they said, Paul, because you've got to get some information.
Yeah.
And then only after that, then you'd end the call, as in you'd then talk about the solution. In other words, the doctor, you'd prescribe at the end. You don't prescribe, oh, hello, do you want...
So what would be a good finish on a first call that's really just about starting a rapport and finding out some information?
So you mean at the end of the call?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if somebody's just said something to you like, at the moment we're not doing anything, but we're planning something in the next six months, well, you might say, well, based on the fact that you're planning something in the next 6 months, I really would like to keep in touch with you.
Okay.
When would be a good time to follow that up or to continue that relationship? Now, just by saying when would be a good time, you're now getting something back from the person and you're going to then start then to use that as building that relationship. Rather than saying, this is what the ends that I hear, where you can tell they just go, right, all right then, well, lovely, it was a great call, thank you very much. I'll call you in a few months.
I'm laughing because we've all been there.
I've done it. We've been guilty. I'll call you in a few months, and then you ring back when you feel like it, and they go, "Oh, you're such a shame you didn't ring 2 months ago because we were at a requirement then." When if you'd have asked them when to call back, you're then saying, when can I call you back? They say, call me back in August. And when you ring them back, you say, Paul, you know, when we spoke in June, you told me to call you back at this time because...
So that all makes really good sense. It's all good.
It's logic, isn't it?
It's all good practical stuff. And those skills of listening and good questions,
yeah,
are sadly missed skills in the majority of life, aren't they? But they're really, really good skills.
Yeah, it's silly. I just want, you know, anyone listening to this that is having to either raise awareness about a service or a product, the worst mistake you can make if you are ringing somebody for the first time, ringing somebody for the first time is to ask them as soon as they answer the phone, oh, hello, Paul, it's Audrey calling from. Just want to see, would you be interested in? That question is a passion killer. That question is like going to the doctors and them just giving you some pills without you even telling them what the problem is. And yet I hear so many people that I train use that phrase, and it's not their fault, Paul, because that's... they're self-taught, or that's what they've been told, or whatever it might be. So for me, if you can just get that structure right and ask good questions, you'll have such a different experience to feeling like a cold caller.
If you'd only got one magic question that you could ask, would you have one?
I would position it and say, I really just want to get a better understanding of what you're doing. So can I just ask you, what do you do in terms of? So it depends on what it is. But I'm always saying, I really would like to get better understanding of how I can help you, or I just really want to find out. I'm just interested in knowing that just interested position.
Is that because you're expressing an interest in you?
Yeah.
And therefore it makes you psychologically feel
it's about,
that you're interested.
It's about learning about the prospect of the customer, yeah, not what you want. And always trying to make sure where you can make your first question an open-ended one. Because if you're saying, you know, what do you do in terms of, or how do you go about, rather than would you be interested, can I arrange a meeting straight away, then you're going to get a different response.
Yeah,
because, you know, even if you are nervous, if you've asked an open-ended question, it's actually giving you time to think. Because they're talking now. They're doing all the talking, aren't they?
Perfect.
And you can then think, oh, what do I do now? Something that...
Right, so that's good. So the next one that's kind of linked,
yeah,
to that, another common one, particularly for our... sales teams.
Yeah.
How do you get past the receptionist?
Oh, the receptionist. Of course,
do you still have receptionists nowadays?
Well, the receptionist is just a person who picks up the phone that isn't the decision maker.
Yeah.
That's the quickest way to put it. You don't get past the receptionist doing the three T's.
Go on, explain.
What do the three T's stand for? Saying too much, too soon, to the wrong person. That's what happens, don't we? So we've got something we want to talk about purchasing, or we want to talk about metals or whatever it is, because I've been doing a lot of work with you, as you know. And we ring up and we see reception. Oh, hello, it's Audrey here calling from Howarth Timber and Building Supplies.
Hey,
and
well done.
I got it right this time, didn't I? I'm just ringing because I was walking past your place and I've noticed you've got ABC and I just really want to see if it could be interested in purchasing or whatever. And the receptionist goes, it's not me. You need to speak to our buyer. You've wasted time. Instead of saying, I just wonder what's, if you've got the name of the buyer, you say, well, could you put me through to Paul Wilson, please? Just straight away. You don't even need to say, hello, it's Audrey calling from. Just say, can you put me through to Paul Wilson, please? Or Paul Wilson, please.
So less is more.
Less is more. And then they automatically will say, who's calling? Howarth Timber and Building Supplies. Stop. Don't say any more than that.
Why is it important to stop and say as little as you can?
Because the receptionist, all they're concerned about is putting you through to the right person. They don't want to know what you're ringing about, why you're ringing, and your life story.
Yeah.
They just want to put you through. And as soon as you start telling them too much, they come to a decision. Oh, you're best to email. Send something in the... Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's good.
And that's what happens.
And I guess if you're nervous about making the call, then you're more likely to waffle and try and expand your
story. And you just go on and on and on, and you just lose control, totally lose control.
Any other tips?
Emails, because receptionists sometimes say, can you send an email? And I always say, if they say, can you send an email, I would always go, although I can send an email, I would prefer to have a chat with them first. So try and take more control of your calls when you're dealing with receptionists.
Okay.
And they're not, the receptionists aren't there to be difficult. They're there to do a job, just like we're trying to do a job. So we have to have a level of respect, but we also have to be assertive.
Yeah. I like that point about not wasting their time. Because if it's a busy switchboard, there can be loads of calls coming in, and if you're giving your life story.
What's quite interesting is when I'm doing training and the receptionist is the biggest thing that comes up, how do you get past them? And I do have a laugh because I say, do you know, by the way, I'm a bit of a double agent here because I train receptionists to block salespeople.
Do you?
Yes. Yeah, so when I'm doing customer service training, at the start, I always say, go away, come up with three things that you'd hope you'll gain from today. And every single time, how do we block salespeople?
You're going to have to share that now.
Well, you ask them what the call's in connection with. Because that question, when they go, what's the call about, is when we say too much too soon to the wrong person.
So you kind of lure them in.
You lure them in. And if they go, you better say, what's it in connection? Oh, it's in connection with purchasing. As a salesperson, it's the shortest bit. So it's in connection with potential job opportunities. Okay. It's in connection with finance. You just keep it short.
Good tip, that.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have thought of that, brevity. Just it makes
they're all makes they're really thinking about is the job title to put you through to.
Yeah.
So if you say it's in connection with marketing, they would, oh, Paul, we've got a call for you. They might still say what's in connection with, but that's where the skill comes into it of how you respond to that.
Good. Right. This is an AI created question.
Oh gosh. AI.
So I'm gonna have to trust in it that it is right.
Yeah, so if it's not one of these long winded ones that go.
It was.
I bet it was.
Until I went for brevity, because I won't get it past you.
Oh, yeah.
On your website, it says, and I haven't checked it says, but I'm assuming it does say, every moment of customer contact is vitally important.
Yeah.
Could that be on your website?
Yes, could be, yeah. Well done, AI.
What are your top three tips for creating a genuinely customer-friendly attitude over the phone? I keep asking you top three because you said you like to be asked top three.
That's true. Be prepared to listen. And not just listen, but demonstrate that you've actually understood the person that's asking the questions.
So how do you actively listen then on the phone?
You would say things to them like, right, so if I can just confirm, and then you repeat something back that shows that you've done it, or you might go, so they can feel that that's happening. And a good customer experience is asking, it comes back to questions again. Customer experience is about showing empathy, which AI can't do, by the way.
Can you describe empathy?
Empathy is where, I'll give you a really good example, actually, is where a customer might say, we've had a really bad experience with you. And people think empathy is just saying, oh, I'm really sorry about that. I'm really sorry. Which doesn't mean anything, really.
No.
But if you may say to them, can I just ask what happened? And they tell you, you might say, well, you know, your lead times were rubbish. Your prices are just always out. Empathy is where you'd say, I'm really sorry that you've experienced that. That's certainly not what we want. And thank you so much for sharing that with me. So empathy is where you kind of go a bit deeper. And sometimes you don't even have to say something. Sometimes it's just absolutely listening to somebody that makes a difference. Because on the phone, sometimes it's difficult because we jump ahead of the customer. We kind of try and end their sentences. Well, we need to just sit and listen and then reflect back to them what we believe they're trying to say.
So I asked for three. Give me five.
Oh, have I? I do. That's me, Paul. Sorry. I'm so, honestly.
Listen. Listen actively.
Yes.
So
don't just listen.
Affirming mirroring, repeating. Asking good questions.
Yeah.
Showing empathy.
Yeah.
I've put and
you've mixed them together.
I've mixed them together. And reflect back of what they're saying.
Yeah.
Very good. Your website also talks about using every opportunity.
Yeah.
So how could you turn a customer complaint into a positive?
Well, first of all, the first thing about customer complaints is that we have to thank the customer for bringing it to our attention. That sounds really bizarre, but actually when I do customer service training, I see people getting upset because a customer's complained about something that was done. They get on the defensive, but we really need to thank them for that. And then absolutely feeding that back. Feedback is crucial in terms of turning that into an opportunity. So it might be they've complained about something that was not in stock, for instance. that doesn't mean to say that you show empathy, but then you give them alternatives. You know, there's an opportunity, mm-hmm. an opportunity to speak to somebody within the business, to arrange an appointment, to go to have a chat with somebody, whether it's on Teams or whatever it might be. There are always opportunities. Opportunity to ring an old account that you've not dealt with for some time or is unhappy. That's a great opportunity. But what I see is sometimes when I get organisations say, well, we want our staff to be able to ring inactive accounts that not dealt with this some time. They say things like, oh no, we let them down, I dare ring them. I say, no, that is an opportunity. Ring them, find out what's happened, find out how you can change that.
How do you make people do that? So when they're in front of you and you can use your natural energy and confidence and passion to fire them on, what tips do you leave people with when they're out in the wilds on their own?
First thing, tip I give them is to celebrate their wins, even though they might feel like losses. So if somebody's like really nervous about picking up the phone and they actually did get through to somebody, but they didn't get anything from that call, I say, well, celebrate the fact that you've actually picked up the phone. Isn't that something that should be celebrated? Yeah. That's a massive win in my eyes.
Yep.
Celebrate the fact that you've got somebody's name that you didn't have on the account. So I think sometimes people just are too hard on themselves.
Are people expecting then
perfection?
Yeah, okay. Are people naturally thinking if they don't get an order from the first call, then it's a failure?
Yeah, but do you know what happens there, Paul, is if they're thinking that shows me that they didn't set any call objectives.
Right, okay.
Because if you're setting call objectives, you know, which might be three, I'll call it gold, silver, bronze, or one, two, three, even if they say no to the order, the objective may have been, let's get an order. You didn't get that order. What was the second objective? Objective, you had a really good conversation. You found out information. You've agreed a callback time. The third objective might be that you've now got their email address. So there's, by setting these call objectives, no call ever feels like it's a failure.
Because there's always something.
You've learned something from it, haven't you?
Yeah, okay. So that's a regular theme, this planning before you
the
make
planning
it.
Planning makes a major difference, and practice.
Planning and practice. So we've talked about AI and the impact of AI. We had a presentation at a manager's conference a month, 6 weeks ago with an AI company. They said along the lines of, AI won't take over the world.
No.
People with AI will. What do you see the future of the phone is alongside AI in the years to come?
I feel, I'm already looking at that, to be honest, because I do feel that the phone will keep increasing because everybody will always want human touch. But the AI can actually also enable people to practice.
Okay.
Because I've always said that one of the biggest things, even with training, is that people still don't get enough practice. And I mentioned earlier that one of the things I'm looking at is working with somebody who's creating AI personas to enable people to practice. So AI will become more intelligent to sort of responses that you might get. And I feel that will keep increasing. But the phone will still always be up here.
So what you're talking about there is a system where you can physically make calls and talk to an AI.
No, you don't actually make the call. You're actually in on a platform. You'll look like you're dialing a number because you're pressing a thing and it brings up a persona.
Okay.
A certain persona.
That will talk to you. Fine. So it will feel like you're having
a conversation. The AI persona will give you objections and you're responding. And I've been doing that. I've been working on that. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
Is that, you're physically using it now?
Yes, yeah.
And what response do you get from people when they're using it?
Just blown away because they've been able to keep practicing, but shocked that the AI person is saying something back, like not interested. And, you know, what's quite good about the AI is giving them different levels of difficulty. So you're easy to get through, then the next one, that's going to get better and better and better. And I feel then that the younger generations we've been talking about will really work well with the AI because it's private. They're doing it on their own. They're not having to worry about peer pressure. And that will give them the practice that they need.
Mm. Have you a view on, so everything nowadays is kind of call centre. You want to phone the bank, it goes through to a call centre. You've got a customer service inquiry with Amazon. It's always to a call centre. And quite often to a foreign country where accent and language makes it a difficult experience.
Yeah.
Have you a view on why big businesses still do that, even though
from the feedback I've had from some of the big businesses I know is down to cost.
Pure cost.
Yeah, mainly cost. Being able to outsource it.
And they don't see that it does more damage than...
It does do more damage, but what I will say to you is the sort of training I don't do any call centre work at all.
None?
None whatsoever.
For what reason?
Because in the past when I've worked with call centres years ago, and even I know people who do, it's scripted. Call centre is generally scripted, whereas you want to be natural on calls. And that's not always the case when it's been scripted. They're not able to actually manoeuvre and adapt.
Yeah, okay. So it's not a true conversation.
It's not a true conversation. And I've noticed an increase now where people are actually dialing that are, they're not real people. You just speak to them and they go, is that Audrey? And you go, yeah. And you can say anything to them. They'll still be going through their script, which is quite frightening.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
So you talked a lot about confidence and mindset. If you were going to give us three again.
God.
Three tips. Yeah. You said you liked them.
Well, maybe just two.
Can you give me two tips on confidence or mindset?
Confidence is all about practice. That's, to me, without a shadow of a doubt, you only will build your confidence by practicing and practicing and practicing, without a doubt. And also looking at mindset is about what's the worst that can happen. So looking at maybe what you're worried about and converting that into positive.
Okay, in positive
phrase. That makes a major difference.
Yeah. Do most businesses train the right people? You've talked about people who have line managers who aren't confident.
Yeah. Sometimes people are just not made out to do phone calls. You know, I've met individuals in businesses where the boss says, right, we want Paul now to be ringing customers. And I listen to them and it's clear to me that they really feel so uncomfortable that it's actually not nice. It's not fair to put them through that due to a lot of reasons. It could be that they're so introvert, could be down to the way they are, could be down to just not being able to think logically about how to do something, even if you show them. And some people are just putting square peg in a round hole. That's the worst thing you can do. That's the worst thing you can do. And I've seen it, and I've seen people's anxiety go through the roof. But others that have maybe nervous, but then have been trained and had practice, who end up being fantastic. Really,
have you got any stories you could share on somebody who...
I've got one in particular. I did a training course a few months ago, well, last year, actually. And this lady, Sharon, she was so nervous. I mean, she... Literally, when I, because I had the kit, and she came up to me and she went, we're not doing role plays, are we? And I said, don't worry about it. She says, I'm not doing role play. And her palms were sweating. She was shaking. And I thought, do you know what? Maybe it's not best to do this because she's not. And then I started to do the role plays, and she started to do the role plays, practicing it. And she just seemed to take to it, the role plays. In fact, what I did was I got her to actually just ring up and get people's names.
Okay.
So not actually doing the full call, but just ringing, oh, what's the name? Just getting the name to build the confidence. And she just made a couple of calls, started to use the structure because you train them in the course how to use the structure. She learnt all the right questions and she was still nervous, but she had role plays. And then she went and did her first. And one of the things I do in this course is they actually make real life calls during the training.
Yep.
So it's not just role plays. They actually have a list and they go away. And she went away into this call. But what made it worse is that she did the call and her manager, she went and sat on the desk where a manager was. And I said to them, you can go anywhere in the office. But she went and sat near the manager. Well, the manager came up and sat next to her. And she, by fluke, she picked up the phone, dialed the number, and the actual decision maker was the right person who came on the phone. And I could see their eyes and rabbit in headlights, and I'm thinking, oh no, you know. But she just controlled it because she had a structure. And she put the phone down and she was shaking, and she said, oh, I've been able to find some, they've got some jobs, and I'm going to, you know, she'd really think about them. And on this particular course, I do a follow-up. So I message them and I see them online for an hour after. And about 3 weeks later, she came online, she went, Audrey, you won't believe it. And I says, what? She says, I'm training people now. So she started doing the course and she was getting better and better at it. And she runs what we call a job club, getting people into work. And she was training those people that were unemployed how to do exactly what I trained her to do, which was to ring up to get the person's name. But in the course, I actually, on the course as a trainer, did the call live in front of the group. So they all saw me do it. She did exactly the same in her job club. I was blown away. And she said, oh, I love it. I love it. And I'm thinking, this is somebody who was shaking.
Yeah.
And I only spent one day with her. And I know that there's two things that why this was successful. Even though she was fearful, she had that mindset where she wanted to give it a go. And the first part of the training I spend is all about mindset. So we do exercises around that. Then she had a practice before she did the live course. So she had to go at practicing so she knew what to expect. And then she did the live calls and actually started to get results. So she bought into it.
Can you get most people into a positive mindset?
I'd say 90% of people I work with, and I say only 90, I'm being real here, 90 that
I've got it somewhere.
I've seen them convert from when they walk through the door to when they finish and the work. Some of my coach ongoing, but there's 10% that will never, ever change. They won't. They just said, nope.
It's not for me.
It's not for me. I'm not doing it. And you can't force somebody.
No.
You can't force somebody. They're just, and when I get down to the back of it, they have this experience of being seen at, laughed at, worried that they're going to make a pig's ear of it or whatever. And they just won't do it. And I'm never going to force anybody not to do it. But 90% of people, 100%.
I've got positivity.
Oh yeah.
Somewhere.
100%. Yeah. Brilliant. Love it.
Do businesses spend enough time on mindset generally? I don't just mean on phones.
In my experience, I can only talk from my experience, no. But that's normally because a lot of them that I work with don't realise actually it's the mindset that's going to make the difference. So they'll come to me going, the staff aren't picking up the phone, but they're not getting down to why they're not picking up the phone. What's the blockage that's stopping them? Mm. And it comes down to, I'm going to be seen to be look stupid. I won't know what to say. I hate the idea of doing sales, all that. And they don't do that. They just literally go, right, you're starting the job. Right, get on the phone. You can sit with so-and-so, pick up and that makes it worse.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to do it. So to be fair to businesses, they don't know that you really do need to do a session on recognising the sort of negative talk we say to ourselves and how to raise that.
Yeah. Generally speaking, all businesses, we focus on the end goal of sales and not the
process. There's trust the process. I've always said that.
Yeah.
You have to trust that process, because as long as you are doing the things you should be doing it in the order you should be doing it at, you will get the end result. It's just maths, really.
It is, yeah. It's good. So what's next for you then?
Well, I'm developing my AI,
yep.
As I've told you. I've got an online course that I've got right now. It's 8 weeks and there's an AI part to that where people can actually practice, which is going to make a major difference. I've got a couple of courses CPD accredited now, so creating opportunities by, because I really want to do, I think it's really important to have the standard right. And I'm just going to keep trying to convert people, just to make them realise that the phone, whether you're dealing with an existing customer or a potential customer, is not your enemy. It's there to help you build those stronger relationships. And that's all I'm doing.
And the areas that you focus on are sales, customer service,
and employer engagement.
Don't just talk about that a little bit more.
Employer engagement.
I do.
I'm very passionate about employer engagement. So I mentioned the fact that I used to be a job club leader, getting unemployed people back into work. And what makes me smile is that we talk about sales and cold calling, but a lot of people don't know there are charities, NHS out there, who pick up the phone to ring employers to try and find work for individuals that might, for instance, have been long-term unemployed or mental health conditions or disabilities.
Okay.
So in a way, they're kind of put in the same basket of doing outgoing calls, but the service they provide is fully funded.
Okay.
So I train a lot of their staff to identify these opportunities with employers who pay lots of money for Indeed and all these other things when they could be using a service like this. And they have the same issues, anxiety, getting through to the right person. So a lot of my, because I used to work in that industry, a lot of my work is with that sector, although I do a lot of work in this sector as well. So yeah, I'm passionate about it because I see the difference it makes to the advisors who then identify the opportunities and they literally change lives.
Yeah.
So the phone to them is so important. Yeah. This is not just picking up the phone. This is actually trying to find the right people. For me, it makes a major difference.
And you've just been away in Portugal.
Yes, with an event all to do with supported employment, understanding that how we can engage employers more, how we can get them to be more inclusive. Again, that's all about picking up the phone as well and having these face-to-face conversations. I just love it. I just think that the more conversations we can have, not just with employee engagement, sales customers, the more conversations we can have, seeing the whites of people's eyes or hearing their voices will really cement these relationships.
Obviously, with the use of video call becoming more and more, it's how we run our lives now, isn't it, since COVID. Is a video call the same as a phone call?
Yes, it is, in the sense that the phone call can build a relationship, but a video call is even better because you can see the person. And I will tell you a really quick story, because I share that I love phones and sales, but I had my own fears, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago in COVID. Before then, I would not do any videos. Honestly, I'm the one hide behind the emails. I was hide behind videos. There's no way I'm doing a video that I'm not. I was scared, absolutely scared of doing videos. Didn't want no one taking pictures of me. Forget it. And COVID came, and for the first 6 months, I honestly thought I'd lost my business because nobody wanted me to go on site and deliver training. And then I thought, do you know what, Audrey? You're going to have to get over yourself here. You are going to have to get over yourself.
You need a good mindset.
I had to start practicing what I preach, Paul. How am I going to get visible? I've got to go on camera. I absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated it. Now it's the best thing I ever did.
You realise you're on camera now?
I'm on camera now. I hated it at the beginning though, didn't I? Best thing I ever did. And that just again proves you get over your fear and then you get such good results.
Yeah.
You know, it's all to do with mindset.
If it's not quite you probably wouldn't first call, on a video call.
No.
But you maybe would a follow-up call.
Yeah.
Would you just adopt the same kind of strategy, have a plan?
Yeah, because, we're not saying that the phone is the be-all and end-all, We're saying that the phone has to be part of a strategy. So if you decide that you, for whatever reason, you want to send out direct mail or social media or whatever it might be, the phone should come into that cycle. So if you've gone and sent something via post, you should be picking up the phone within 24 hours, 48 hours, and having a conversation to follow that up.
Yeah.
Most of my conversations with my customers is at the moment email, but then if I need something really important, like something happened, I'm the first to pick up the phone. I've got, let's stop sending the emails to and fro. I just want to know this. But then I still do cold calls myself. I still do them because I think it's important that I'm practicing what I preach.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I love it.
You can't stand up there training people.
I can't.
If you're not doing it yourself.
I can't do real calls in a group, which is what I do all the time, if I've never been making them. They'd really show myself up, wouldn't I?
So when you're training with us on Wednesday and Thursday, you'll be doing that on the course for you?
Not this Wednesday and Thursday. You missed that. No. You didn't do live calls for this one. We do live calls.
Shame.
How long have we been working together?
We reckon it's about 10 years. And actually, I did do live phone calls.
You did with me?
Because I remember you coming in with the big, box of all the phones and us all looking gone out.
Yeah, because to me, live calls is what cements it, doesn't it?
Why is it so tough doing like the role play? What do people find that?
Well, role plays aren't real, are they? They're not real. They make you feel even more like conscious, self-aware. But the thing is with role plays, they enable you to kind of practice it.
Before going to...
Yeah. People say to me, I hate doing role plays. I hate acting or learning things. I say, what's your best film that you like? And mine is Shawshank Redemption or Gladiators. And they go, oh, that's mine as well. I said, well, you do realise they all had to have a script. They all had to learn those words and then deliver it. And we all believe them. That's no different to doing a role. I mean, yes, fair enough, you're practicing, but it's in your brain now and you start, when you do the real thing, it's easier doing live calls than doing role plays. And that's how I put it across on training. In all the years, and this is the truth, in 30 odd years of doing this, I have only ever had 3 people that have said no to role plays. All have come on going, we're not doing it. But actually, when it comes down to it, because they see everybody else doing it and it's separate and they're not intimidated, only 3 people.
Fantastic. Right. We're going to start wrapping up now.
Oh, yeah. Right, I'm ready.
So we've got 3 quick fire questions
for you. Oh, gosh. Here we go.
What's your favourite and your least favourite part of your job?
My favourite part of my job is meeting lots of people. I do love that, meeting different groups. My least favourite is because I kind of travel from place to place, I never actually see anywhere. So I never stay long enough to explore the areas, like I was in Kent and London, and I even went to America years ago. You know, I just don't, you don't get a chance to do
just
that.
Just inside an office. And a hotel room.
That's my least part. Oh, I've got one more lease. Can I just say this really quickly? My lease is also when I have groups turn up and they don't know why they're doing the training because they've not been briefed.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah, that happens a lot. So they've come up for the training and you know, they've had their welcome things, but they still haven't been
really
shared why they're on it.
That's such a waste of money for any business, isn't it, if you're not.
I have to sort that out, but that is one that is not good.
Okay. Second one, but I'm going to turn it into two.
Oh.
What's the crucial characteristic or skill you need to be world-class at coaching?
For me, listening. That, for me, has been fundamentally where I've got the best results, of where I've actually sat down, listened, but also prior to that, asking lots of questions. But to me, it's always been listening, because I can just pick out things from what they've kind of maybe said just randomly and thought, there's something that's what's really helped.
Can you remember when you learnt that listening was so important to this?
When somebody said to me years ago, when I jumped ahead, and I'll never forget, "You're not listening, are you?" When somebody actually said, oh, you want this then? He says, "No, I didn't say that. I said this, you're not listening, are you?" And I think when you've had that two or three times, which I had, you start to realise.
So stop being judged.
Yeah,
don't judge. Open your ears.
Yeah, because it's very easy not to be in the moment, isn't it? To just kind of go, I'm thinking of the next thing. So being told that myself.
Same question. Crucial characteristic or skill you need to be world-class at phone sales?
Being curious. For me, it's no matter who it is, customer, prospect, going into that call, being curious is what will win you customers and retain them as well.
Fantastic. I like that. And then our final question.
Oh, you said three.
Yeah, three.
Well,
you've done three so far.
All right.
You two versions of world-class coach and world-class salesperson. I'm going to caveat this one as well, because I think you've already given me your best piece of... the question is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? So we've got your dad's, practice makes progress, not perfection. That's brilliant. Want another one?
Never judge a book by its cover. And the reason being is, as a trainer, it's very easy to come to preconceived ideas about people that you're training. You know, what I've learned is that everybody learns differently. Somebody who you think is sitting there drawing circles on a piece of paper and not listening is actually somebody who's absorbed every single thing and can tell you it. Equally, somebody who's giving it all that and the mouthy one in the group is the one that's learnt the least. So that's my biggest thing for me. Never judge a book by its cover.
You're good at all these words of wisdom.
Am I?
Have you got a third one? Or is that pushing
just
it?
No, for me, it's always been just have fun.
Poor.
Just, you know, everyone you meet, just have fun, be kind.
Do you know what? You're our 21st guest.
Yes.
I've never had a guest give us more than one best piece of advice.
Really?
We've had three now from you.
Well, you know what, I am a talker. I do talk, Paul, you know that.
No, but I was listening when you said, I like it, when I've watched episodes and you've asked people, give me three.
Yeah.
So I've remembered
that. Yeah, you have remembered. And I've given you back four or five.
Practice, progress, perfection. Never judge a book by its cover and have fun in whatever you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed this. I think it's been really, really good, really interesting. You've given away some top tips.
Yes, of course.
And I hope you've done some good to the world out there and started educating all of us.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
So thank you for...
It's been a pleasure, Paul.
...and seeing us. Good luck with my colleagues over the next...
Oh, yeah, I'm there tomorrow. Yes, I am, yeah.
Make sure you share all that with them. And to you, the audience, listeners, thank you for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed listening to Audrey. If you have enjoyed it, like and subscribe would be fantastic on whichever platform that you are watching or listening to us on. And if you can pass the word around to any friends or colleagues who you think might be interested in the podcast, that'd be much appreciated as well. So until next time, thank you very much, and we'll see you again.
Bye.